We're visiting with Dr. Sarah Place, the Chief Sustainability Officer at Elanco. You just gave a great presentation here at the OCA convention on sustainability, but you've actually, you're back visiting because you were at OSU for a while. So how is it to be back?
Yeah, it's great. So it's always good to come back to Oklahoma. I was here from 2013 to 2016 in the Department of Animal Science on faculty, and always good memories of Oklahoma cattlemen and the whole state. It's always great to be back here.
Well, let's get right to the topic of the Burger King stuff, because this has been on everybody's mind for a while, and Facebook and social media has just blown up over it. But tell me, how did they get it wrong?
Yeah, so if folks haven't seen the commercial, you know, it's this kind of, what do we want to say, campy commercial, right, of a kid singing about quote-unquote farting cows. So right off the bat, of course, methane does come from cattle, but it comes out the front end of the animal, right? So that's one ding against the commercial. Methane is not an odor gas, right? It's an odorless gas. Mm-hmm. It does contribute to climate change, but it's not the main driver of climate change. And cattle in the United States, beef cattle specifically, are about 2% of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions, right? In terms of the product they were trying to talk about in that ad, lemongrass specifically, there's just not a lot of research on it. None of the research referenced in that ad is peer-reviewed or published. So it's just some small preliminary data so far. So I would say is, you know, maybe in the future it'll be part of a suite of things that cattlemen can feed to cut down methane. Probably not going to be a 30% reduction or whatever the quoted number was in that ad. But the components of the lemongrass, the tannins, essential oils, we've known about that for years, that sure, can potentially have an effect.
Well, you know, I have to wonder, as somebody that just watches TV, how they can get it so wrong and then put it all over the world. Because this is what we're up against as ag educators, is trying to, you know, circumvent some of these conversations from even happening. And then you get national publicity.
Yes. And just speaking as somebody that, you know, obviously went to land-grant universities for my own education, mm-hmm, obviously worked at them, I think what's key there is, you know, what we need is more science driving this, and we need more research and innovation in this space. I don't know how much an ad campaign like that costs, but we can think, you know, there's a lot of good that those type of dollars can drive, mm-hmm, if we invest back into research, extension, keep improving what we're doing. And I think that's where more bang for your buck is going to come from, rather than talking about the issue. That said, you know, it drew a lot of people's attention. I think it gives agriculture an opportunity to talk about what we are doing now that the spotlight was turned on us a little bit.
Well, and I thought one of the really interesting things that you were talking about today is, one would think during a pandemic, maybe the demand for those meatless products went up, but it didn't.
It did not. No, we've seen the data on whether it's, you know, Beyond Meat or Impossible Meat, all these other imitation products, if you will, that were sold in retail. Their sales increased, as did sales of everything, because we're mostly eating from home now, right? Mm-hmm. But as a percent of the total meat case sales, it has been unchanged. So those imitation products are about 0.6 to 0.7% of the total meat case value.
Right. But what was empty was the beef counter.
Yes, we saw that, right? I mean, there's lots of photos of that. I saw that myself when I was in Colorado when this first happened, is people ran on the stores and they bought the staple products. They bought milk.
Mm-hmm.
They bought that out. They bought beef. They bought a lot of toilet paper, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We bought the things that bring us comfort, that we know are good, and that is meat.
Mm-hmm. Well, your conversation today and your topic was sustainability. What are some of your biggest concerns around sustainability right now?
Yeah, so I think it's more about this perception gap that I think we've just been touching on with regard to this commercial and other aspects of what we see over and over again are kind of some key topics. One is climate change that keeps coming up all the time with regard to meat production and beef specifically. And so again, just 2% of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions come from cattle. That's according to the EPA. And we can talk about that. That number probably itself is a little too high when we look at the realities of how we account for methane.
But that's not what we hear.
No, it's not. It's not, you know, and I think that's the key challenge in this perception that animal agriculture is competitive for human food, I think, mm-hmm, is another key thing. And this concept of upcycling is starting to get a little bit more traction, but essentially saying, you know what livestock do and what cattle do really well is they take things that are of little or no use to people, and they make higher quality products. So people need cattle. whether they eat beef or drink milk or not, right? They need them to take care of the waste products that we generate, all the other foods, whether it's wheat mids to citrus pulp to almond hulls. Cattle take those products and they make high-quality food from them.
Well, and one of the fascinating things you said was even if you're a vegetarian, you still need cattle.
yes, right? That's the basic reality is that we talk about agriculture kind of in ways in the popular press. It doesn't make any sense. We talk about plant-based or animal-based, and reality is agriculture is all tied together, right? We pull one part of the string and the whole thing moves. And when we think about cattle, they play an essential role for people, as you just said, right? If you're a vegetarian, a lot of the foods that you're eating, and they're probably generating byproducts. You go pick up a loaf of bread in the store. There was a bunch of products that came off the mill making that bread that probably got fed back to cattle, and that made it more sustainable, right? So the takeaway is thank a cow for being more for everything being more sustainable.
Well, and cattle are part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Yes, and that's what I think was really key is I know this word sustainability can give people heartburn, and climate change can give people heartburn. But we see the science of this, whether it's this upcycling of food waste products or processing byproducts to the climate change issue and methane, right? It is a short-lived gas, right? It is a potent greenhouse gas, but it's short-lived. And we know by doing the things that we've done in the United States, we can produce more beef and milk with the same size herd. And that means that we're not adding more methane to the atmosphere.
Well, talk a little bit about someone that doesn't know the upcycling. You know, kind of explain that process to our audience.
Yeah, I think what's key is for folks to realize, you know, just the basics. We take a step back. What is agriculture? It's a solar-powered industry, right? It was solar-powered before that was cool, right? and it's a carbon capture industry. And what cattle do is they take all that solar energy that's in plants, that's human inedible, right? Whether that's the grass that they're consuming or whether it's these byproduct feeds, right? Distillers grains, wheat mids, whatever it may be. And they upgrade that into higher quality protein. So what I mean there is those plants, even if we think about wheat or corn, we can eat it, of course, directly. But the protein quality is just not very good of those plants, right? We're not going to get enough essential amino acids when we consume those plants. And we're going to always eat more calories to get our protein requirement when we eat plants only. And that's what livestock do. They concentrate nutrients and they add value to plants. So when we think about beef, we think about the feed good that goes in and the beef that comes out. The protein quality is over 2 times greater in beef than what cattle eat. So they're actually making more high-quality protein than exists without them in the world. So we talk about sustainability, growing world population. That's why we need these ruminant animals like cattle, right? They're able to add more protein to the food supply, add to humanity's collective dinner plate, if you will. They're not competing for these feedstuffs. They're adding to it. So that's really that upcycling story, and that's something that's, again, pretty simplistic, right? That's why we domesticated these critters in the first place, is because they're able to do that.
When you also touched on how important beef is in a dietary form, you know, people are saying, well, the solution is just quit eating beef, you know, get rid of all the livestock, but that's really not a solution at all.
It isn't, you know, and that's another thing for people to remember is that you just can't eat your way out of climate change, right? This is not an issue that, one, is primarily driven by agriculture, so that's a key part of it. But it just doesn't make a big difference if you substitute your diet, right? So there was a great study that was done a couple of years ago looking at what if every American went vegan? And, you know, what would happen is we would slightly reduce greenhouse gas emissions by about 2.6 percentage points. And that's with all 325 million Americans going vegan, right? But the trade-off is we don't have any vitamin B12 in our food supply anymore. And that's a really key essential nutrient. Without it, we would not be alive, right? So that's not a trade-off most are going to be willing to take. And I think it highlights that's with all Americans going vegan, right? That's with all Americans going vegan, all of our livestock somehow disappearing overnight. So the reality is if you're somebody that, you know, wants to do good and you heard about Meatless Mondays and you say, well, I'm going to cut back my food, you know, my meat consumption, it's just not going to add to anything, not to make people feel powerless, right? It's just that it doesn't scale to much change, right? Because if you don't eat that beef or that meat, somebody else probably is going to. You're not changing the demand structure of the U.S. economy. Everybody's important, but we're not that important, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's the key takeaway. You can't eat your way out of climate change.
Well, and think about how many people would be angry all the time. So, like, if I couldn't have my steaks ever, that might change my mood a little bit.
Yes, it would. It would. And I think that's what's key. It's like reality check is most people are omnivores. The reason we eat these foods is they're nutritious and they're delicious, right? I mean, that's the key thing. As we look at what's happening in the world, despite all this talk about dietary change to become plant-based, the overwhelming trend continues. As people get more money in their pockets around the world, they eat more animal source foods. They eat more meat. They eat more eggs, fish. They eat more animal protein. That's actually a good thing for human beings because there's a lot of people that are still either protein deficient or they're deficient in a lot of the micronutrients that animal source foods have, right? So I think we miss the forest for the trees on this topic of, like, that's reality. You're not going to control people. I don't think we want to live in a society where you somehow massively control what 7 billion people eat, right? So the other side of it is like, okay, well, that's reality. We got to step up and meet the challenge in agriculture, right? We got to keep getting better so we can deliver high-quality nutrition to people in a responsible manner. And I think that's the story agriculture needs to say, is say, you know, don't worry about this dietary change thing. You do you. You eat what you want. If it is tofu, awesome. We'll grow soybeans better. And if it's beef, great. We're going to grow cattle better. And just highlight that to people.
So is that kind of what you would suggest to producers is like the first steps of what they can be doing when talking about sustainability is just kind of bringing up the basic things that we've been talking about?
I think so. I think people respond better to positive framings. I think we all do, right? And saying, you know, we're not a big contributor to any of these problems, but we have a contribution. We take responsibility for it. This is what we're doing. And a lot of the things that we can do to improve further are, quite frankly, the things that are going to make your business better. It's the basics of animal husbandry, right? Anytime we're improving reproductive efficiency of cattle, if we improve the genetic merit of cattle, if we improve animal health, we require fewer natural resources to produce food for people. So that's a key thing to drive home, is that better animal welfare equals better for the environment equals better for everybody, right? That connection for folks. So it's not necessarily only new innovation and new technologies. It could be. But sometimes it's just the basic of better management. That actually makes a big difference in this whole story, too.
Well, Dr. Place, thank you so much for sitting down with us. It's been a great convention so far, and it's nice to just be able to see you, like, here sitting with me.
Absolutely.
We've kind of been in quarantine for a while, so it's nice to just get out and see everybody.
Human interaction is a beautiful thing right now, isn't it?
Well, thanks for coming back.
Thank you.
All right.